Forbidden Panel welcomes you to Panelcast, Forbidden Panel's weekly podcast featuring movie and comic news and reviews. And now, your hosts, AJ and Brian.
Welcome to Panelcast. This is your host, AJ.
And this is Brian. You're listening to episode 84.
In this episode, Brian will be reviewing the Fables number one trade paperback while I review the Thor movie.
We'll also be discussing AJ's experience at Free Comic Book Day.
All that and a bag of cookies after our first break. Girl.
This is Brian of the Forbidden Panel Podcast. I just want to invite you to listen to my companion podcast, The Geek Girls, featuring one-on-one interviews with geeky ladies. Look for Geek Girls on ForbiddenPanel.com. And we're back. So where's my bag of cookies?
Well, you have to earn it.
Yeah, it figures. Have to earn everything in this world.
I know.
All right, well, why don't we just do the news then?
Fine, be that way. So, Ron Howard's planned film trilogy and interlocking TV series adaptation of Stephen King's The Dark Tower saga has always been seen as an extraordinarily ambitious. Now, however, that ambition might be too big for the company behind it, Universal Pictures. Variety is reporting that the project has run into budgetary complications, which have caused studio execs to rethink original plans. Meetings are reportedly expected in coming days to determine whether to put the project into turnaround, which would allow producer Image Entertainment to shop it around and either bring another studio on board as a partner or let another take it over completely. Deadline adds that Universal has put pre-production staff on hiatus as they discuss ways to bring down the budget. One thing's for certain, the September start date has now been scratched. The move isn't unprecedented. Universal pulled out of Guillermo del Toro's At the Mountains of Madness amid concerns that the $150 million budget R-rated project would struggle to be profitable. A project of this scale would cost considerably more, so it's not unreasonable for the studio to want to share the risk if possible, with Javier Bardem's deal to play the lead role of Roland Deschain nearly closed. Imagine certainly has a viable property here. Basically, what they're saying is that it's too. They took on too much. You know, they didn't participate in how much money it was going to cost, and now they're scared that whether or not it's going to make money. But here's the deal: it's going to make money. It's going to make a lot of money.
Right. I mean, it's Stephen King's Dark Tower.
Right. This is the series that 90% of the people out there have read.
Yeah, I mean, these books have sold like a kajillion copies. They had to invent a number for, you know, the number of books that he sold.
And the only way that it's not going to make any money is if you guys fuck it up.
Right.
So here's the deal. Don't fuck it up.
Just throw lots of money on this project.
Yeah, make it happen.
Get it done.
Or be smart, call up HBO and say, yo, you know the shit you're doing with Game of Thrones?
Right.
Hook it up with fucking Dark Tower here and make that happen.
Right, we know that they can do this, right?
Right.
So, do it right.
Stupid. Your turn.
Well, apparently the director of Fast Five, which I don't know what that is, Justin Lin.
You don't know what Fast Five is?
Nope, no idea.
What? It's the fifth sequel to Fast and Furious.
No idea.
You're fired.
But anyway, no, he sat down and talked with MTV News recently about his directing of the new Terminator movie, and was asked about whether he was going to be bringing back the cast from the original film. He was quoted as saying, "I don't know where that came from. Everything has just been between me and Arnold, you know. I have a certain elements, but it's never been about, hey, let's bring everybody back. I just don't process that way." So what it seems like is really the only person that's going to be returning to the new Terminator movie is Arnold Schwarzenegger. So anybody out there that was kind of hoping for a reunion of Kyle Reese and Sarah Connor, well, probably won't happen. But I think that that whole kind of storyline is really kind of played out anyways.
You know, I think it's kind of bullshit. I think it's, you know, I know a lot of people out there didn't like Terminator Salvation. I get that. But I personally dug it. I thought it was an awesome movie.
Right. I would like to see a continuation of that storyline.
Right,
like,
because...
tell some of the other stories in the Terminator series, and like, I mean, we kind of already got the whole point between Terminator and Terminator 2. I think really told the whole story of Sarah Connor.
Right, and so now what they need to do is focus on what happens after, you know, once the robots take over, Judgment Day happens. You know, they need to focus on those storylines more. But it seems like all they seem to care about is Arnold. Oh, we got Arnold back. Well, guess what? Arnold wasn't in the last movie, just his fucking body double and a CGI copy of it, and it was still a badass movie. So why don't you focus on the film as a whole instead of focusing on one character, one actor, who, honestly, Arnold Schwarzenegger character could be filled with anybody's face at this point because he was just the robot. He's just a cyborg. They could have replaced him and made it a little bit better, but I don't know. It's just Arnold trying to say, yo, I'm out of a job, hook a brother up at this point.
Well, it's not like he's hurting for money. But my main concern is mostly just the fact that, I mean, Arnold is considerably older than he was when he originally played the Terminator. It's pretty apparent that he's in his 50s now.
Right. Unless they show, like, the one aged Terminator who, like, you know, like Master Mold with the X-Men.
Maybe, or they just gotta, you know, slap, like, a whole 10 gallons of spackle on him to...
I know, it's gonna cost more money to CGI his build and facial and face than it will for the rest of the movie. So, I don't know. Anyway, asked about future plans for the X-Men series in light of the upcoming First Class prequel reboot, Bryan Singer tells IGN UK that he's open to the idea of Wolverine popping up should they go ahead with a sequel. I think there would be definitely room. I think it would be a very exciting thing. The universe has to establish itself first. But that would be very interesting and a fun thing. The comments differ from producer Lauren Shuler Donner's remark that a fourth X-Men film following the events of X-Men Last Stand would likely be the next project. More likely, they and the studio are waiting to see the returns on First Class should it do as well or better than the current series' box office high mark. Last Stand, $100 million U.S. opening, $459 million worldwide gross. I wouldn't be surprised if X4 talk quietly fades into the background. Stop making X-Men movies.
Yeah, that's pretty much been my sentiment since the first or second one, so... I have to say that I'm probably going to end up watching it at some point, but I'm just not excited about it.
Yeah. You've already made it. Like, my favorite character growing up was Wolverine. I always related to him in somehow, some way, shape, or form. I'm 38, so that tells you, like, I was all aboard the Wolverine train long before anybody else jumped on it. And then you ruined it by making these movies. Like, I'm no longer a fan of Wolverine. I think he sucks.
Yeah, I wasn't too happy with the treatment of Rogue, who is my favorite X-Men.
Yeah, so... And, hey, call up HBO.
Yeah, let's just give everything to HBO from now on. We'll just make them the only filmmakers, and we'll let them handle everything.
Right, do an X-Men Academy TV series, you know, and that way we can grow with these characters and get to learn these characters and go from there. It's okay to have a bad episode every now and then, but it's not okay to have a bad movie series. It's just not happening. Anyway, I'm done ranting.
So, when you think of the phrase Japanese teenager, who springs into your mind? Because for me, it's Keanu Reeves.
Keanu Reeves, obviously.
Yeah. Well, the reason I say this is because apparently Keanu Reeves is currently in talks to join the cast of Akira as the teenage Kaneda, which the guy is pushing 50. I mean, he's almost there.
Right.
He's 46 years old. He should not be playing teenagers.
Though he is doing Bill and Ted 3.
Bill and Ted 3, I can accept, because they can just do Bill and Ted as older Bill and Ted.
Right.
Okay, that's fine. But playing a teenager, really? I mean, he doesn't look young. I mean, he doesn't look old, but he doesn't look young.
There's plenty of decent teenage actors out there right now that you could swoop up and help play in this role. I swear to Christ. But they're just trying to attach a name to the project so that they can get some sort of any type of publicity, you know?
Just go grab somebody from Japan.
I would almost rather see Justin Bieber in this movie than Keanu Reeves at this point. That tells you how much I hate Keanu Reeves. So,
well, you might have something there. It at least would put seats in, you know, the movie theater.
Right. Anyway, so a little over a year ago, it was confirmed that acclaimed fantasy writer Neil Gaiman would be penning an episode of sci-fi hit Doctor Who. This week, we finally get to see what he's cooked up. The BBC has released a trailer and two clips from the highly anticipated episode, in which an apparent distress call from another Time Lord brings the TARDIS crew to a junkyard in a bubble universe where they meet a rather eccentric family. Early reviews say that this is essentially a big love letter to all the Who mythology, and it's apparently the singularly most expensive show of the first half of the season. I personally stopped watching Doctor Who after Chris Eccleston left, but from my understanding, it's still doing great and it's gaining fans left and right. And I may watch the Neil Gaiman episode because, you know, Neil Gaiman's the man. So
right.
That is showing sometime this week. So if you if we've managed to edit this before it shows, awesome. If it's already shown, please let us know what you think about it.
Yeah, I'll probably give it a watch because I'm kind of late to the game with the whole reboot of Doctor Who, but I've started watching it and gotten up to the David Tennant part of this series, and I have to say, for all its cheese, I'm enjoying it.
Really? Like, I got about 3/4 of the way through with Eccleston, and I it was too cheesy for me. I couldn't do it anymore. But I'll give it another shot. I don't know.
Maybe just start from the season 2 with the Tennant episodes and see if maybe you just like a different person better.
Yeah. Or maybe I can just hate them.
Yeah, you could do that.
Pardon the loud noise in the background, guys, if you can hear it. Today is the day that they're mowing lawns, apparently.
Yeah, and I'm sure that we'll probably end up having a guest appearance by my neighborhood fire engine as well. So.
Absolutely. Just see, for Forbidden Panel, we're nothing but professionals.
So Ethan Hawke is going to be joining the cast of the remake of Total Recall. And I have to say that in this case, I'm actually excited for a remake because the Total Recall that we have right now is nothing at all like the story that I thought it was going to be like.
Yeah, but it's a big, huge cult favorite, and it's fairly iconic.
It is. It is an iconic movie, and, you know, I mean, it's if you take it just on its own merits as just you separate it from the Philip Dick story that it was supposedly based on, and, you know, it's entertaining. But
that's true for almost anything that they've done based on his work. I mean, different author, but iRobot had nothing to do with the story, the book itself, but it was still an entertaining movie at the same time. Same with I Am Legend. Why is Will Smith fucking everything up? Anyway, I Am Legend really had nothing to do with the book series either, but it was a decent movie on its own.
Yeah, but my biggest problem, though, is just that Philip Dick stories have this tendency to just get horribly butchered when they get translated into film. Like, the people making them just toss the book out the window and just do whatever the hell they want.
What about Blade Runner?
Blade Runner was the exception, but Philip Dick was still alive when they made that film. So.
It depends on which version of the film, I guess, we're talking about. There's like 12 of them out there.
Right.
Blade Runner is the new Dune at this point. You know, there's just so many different versions out there, you can never keep track of them all.
But, I mean, the Paul Verhoeven version of Total Recall was just, it wasn't good, really.
You're talking about the same guy that made Starship Troopers and ruined that franchise as well.
Yeah. He hasn't done anything good since RoboCop, really.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm actually excited to see that they are going to be redoing We Can Remember It For You Wholesale and hopefully try to be a little more true to the story because it seems that all of Philip Dick's subtlety in terms of, like, the messages in his story really kind of get lost when they get translated, and most of the time they just turn them into like these sort of like sci-fi action films, so it doesn't make any sense when you actually read Philip K. Dick's stories.
Yeah, they do what they can in order to make it profitable. Unfortunately, if that means butchering up the originals, that's what they're going to do.
But I don't think that they really have to do that. I mean, look at movies like Moon, you know, that, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of fanfare for it, but it was still a relatively successful movie, and there was no real action in that. It was all psychological. I mean,
Actually, you're kind of wrong about Moon. Moon did not make a lot of money whatsoever, but it was such a phenomenal movie because it was independently created that it almost won an Oscar. Now, it's still one of the movies that nobody, one of the best movies that nobody's ever seen, though.
Yeah, I guess maybe I picked the wrong example there, but I do think that there's a chance for science fiction movies to be successful without them being just like these explosion-filled action crap fests.
You want to see a good sci-fi movie that doesn't go over the top with action? Watch Outland.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on.
Okay, fine. Be that way. Speaking about movies that have nothing to do with books they're based off of, as many of you know, Cowboys and Aliens is coming out this year. The trailer looks amazing, and everything about it looks awesome, though, again, as I've reported in the previous panel cast, has very little, if nothing at all, to do with the comic book, other than the title, and that there's cowboys and aliens in it. Well, we're actually going to see something different from that. A few years from now, the Outer Space Buggers are planning to go even further back in time. Men in Black film series director Barry Sonnenfeld and comic writer Grant Morrison are teaming up to develop Dominion, Dinosaurs versus Aliens, a cross-platform property to be produced as both a graphic novel and a movie, reports Deadline. The comic, to be published through Liquid Comics later this year, chronicles a secret prehistoric battle when aliens invade Earth. Our only hope is dinosaurs who turn out to be a lot more intelligent than previously realized. Sonnenfeld will direct a film and will produce with Arnold Rifkin and Shahrahar Dabarkhan. So, yeah, I'm actually kind of excited about that. I mean, it's Barry Sonnenfeld, so you know it's going to be kind of cool. And,
right.
Dinosaurs versus Alien. I mean, as long as it's not Land Before Time 12, I mean, we should be fine.
It could go either way.
Yeah, we'll see. It'll be awesome on the cheese factor, though.
Well, here's something else that could go either way. I don't remember which episode it was, but we mentioned a story about Peter Pan getting reimagined as a sort of a modern, darker, grittier kind of movie. Some more details here that apparently what it's going to be retold as is a kidnap thriller. It's going to be starring Aaron Eckhart, and it's supposed to, I guess... what it's supposed to do is to take the story of Aaron Eckhart playing Captain Hook as a tormented former detective on the trail of a childlike kidnapper. So it sounds like it's going to be kind of interesting.
I'm down for it. I mean, I'm tired of the same old with Peter Pan. You know, they need to have some fun with it, change it up.
Yeah, I think especially... considering the fact that I'm going to be reviewing Fables in this episode, it definitely kind of gave me another perspective on the sort of adult reimagining of fairy tales.
Yeah.
So I think that something like this could actually work pretty well, depending on how they go about it.
You know, everything that we ever review as far as movies or TV shows or what have you coming from comic books or whatever can go either way at this point. But if they do it right, I'd be excited to see it. If they do it wrong, we'll be the first persons to talk shit about it on the show.
Yeah, so keep my eye out for this one.
Yep.
Sounds interesting.
With Smallville finishing this week after 10 years, Tom Welling is back on the market professionally after finishing his commitment to play Clark Kent. Of course, Superman is the flagship hero of DC Comics, the main rival to Marvel Comics. Now, what's playing reports that Marvel has approached the actor to play another superhero and one of their upcoming film properties. Which role, however, isn't clear as the studio has several in development. Recently, Welling was considered for Snow White and the Huntsman, a role that went to Thor star Chris Hemsworth. Former Smallville showrunner Alfred Goh has also expressed interest in reteaming with Welling on a potential reboot of the Alan Quatermain franchise. If I were Tom Welling, I'd run away from superheroes, period. Because he's just getting hardcore typecast. And I'm sure he's pretty burnt out on the whole thing anyway. But
being typecast is not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, some actors are extremely successful doing that.
True, but I mean, the only other films that I've seen him in was the Cheaper by the Dozen movies, you know, where he showed up every now and then. And, yeah. Anyway, what else you got?
Well, I was thinking, why don't we take a quick break and then come back with some more news?
Alrighty, we'll be right back, guys.
Guys, this is Daniel Corey. I'm the founder of Danger Cat Creative Studio, and I want to tell you real quick about my upcoming comic, Moriarty, The Dark Chamber. It's about Professor Moriarty, the arch nemesis of Sherlock Holmes. I'm working with artist Anthony Diachidua on it, letterer Dave Lampier. Please go to dangercat.com and check it out. That's DangerCat.com. And please go over to Kickstarter.com. We're running a campaign right now to try to raise funds for the production of the book. So, you know, shoot us an email, let us know how you like it, and we'll see you on the web.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Panelcast. We will be continuing on with the news stories now. Brian, take it away.
Well, apparently the story about Neil Gaiman getting paid his $45,000 speaking fee is not quite dead yet. Seems as though another Minnesota politician has proposed cutting the state's regional library budget by the exact amount that Neil Gaiman was paid by the library. So, apparently, the state of Minnesota is still pissed off that they paid Neil Gaiman to come to their library and talk.
Again, I still feel that, that's not Neil Gaiman's fault. It's their fault for actually paying him the $45,000 to come out.
Right.
And kudos to Neil Gaiman for milking that money from them.
Which he donated to charity, by the way,
right,
after paying off agents' fees and everything. I mean, really, Neil Gaiman's not the bad guy in this situation.
Not at all. And head on over to Gutters, the webcomic, because they have a lovely little message for Minnesota on that page.
Oh, yeah. So it was quite brilliant.
Yeah. Moving right along, while this has nothing really to do with comic books other than one show being mentioned in it, I thought it would be important because a lot of stuff in there is kind of cool. Anyway, the TV upfronts aren't up until next week, but Fox has essentially tipped its hand early today with confirmation via TV by the numbers that it has canceled every single one of its shows that were still on the bubble. Five shows are gone, to include Lie to Me, Breaking In, Traffic Light, The Chicago Code, and Human Target.
Another, I did not watch any of those.
Well, you should, because Human Target was actually a decent show. Lie to Me was getting really old. Breaking In, I feel bad because Christian Slater apparently can't hold a TV show series because it keeps getting canceled. But anyway, another on-the-bubble show was Fringe, which thankfully was renewed for a full season last week.
Yay!
The cancellation leaves only two shows from this past season, Raising Hope and Bob's Burgers, and two from last season, Glee and The Cleveland Show, still airing. Only four-hour-long dramas survived the cull: Bones, Fringe, Glee, and House. The network is ready to fill the void, though, with a bunch of new shows about to be slotted in. Four shows have scored pickup: the J.J. Abrams mystery Alcatraz, the Bones spin-off but very Burn Notice-esque Finder, the Zooey Deschanel comedy The New Girl, and the sitcom I Hate My Teenage Daughter have all been ordered to series. Now, again, the reason why I bring this up is because, you know, Human Target is a DC-based TV show. Unfortunately, the second season hasn't been really picked up any steam or headway, and thus I can understand why it's being canceled. Though, if they would have stuck to the same formula they had in the first season, then I think it would have been great. Or had they actually, you know, framed it around what the comic book was based off of, it would have done even better. Breaking In, which is a show about a security firm being hired to break into to rich people's homes or buildings in order to test the security based on it, was actually pretty cool too, in that it showed this last week's episode had them having to secure the copy of Goonies Part 2 and get it over to San Diego Comic-Con in order to be shown for a private screening, and all the measures that they were taking in order to protect it. So it was kind of funny. Plus, it was the only thing Michael Rosenbaum has done since Smallville. So it's sad to see it go, but again, Christian Slater can't hold a TV series for the life of him. Yeah. Brian?
So it turns out that my personal savior, Robert Kirkman, sat down recently to talk a few details about the upcoming Walking Dead TV show, which honestly should be out by now. I can't take it. So basically, there's a few rumors going around. One, that Stephen King is going to be writing an episode, and that Stan Lee is going to be making an appearance as, I guess, possibly as a zombie, but maybe just doing a walk-on of some kind. And he really didn't do a whole lot to actually dispel any of those rumors, but he didn't really confirm them either. What it looks like is that Stephen King is currently in talks to write an episode, but there's been nothing official on either side. So Stephen King said that he's still excited about the idea, and Kirkman has said that, you know, they're still trying to get him to write it, but it hasn't actually happened yet.
You know, if that happens, I think I may just nerdgasm all over the place.
I nerdgasm when I read it.
Being a huge Stephen King fan growing up, which explains a lot of what's wrong with me, and being a big fan of Robert Kirkman and The Walking Dead, you know, it's just put them together and my life is complete. I mean, show me a boob in there and that's all I would need. So, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, ultimately Robert Kirkman said that he can neither confirm or deny any of the rumors, but at the same time, gave hints that there's certainly a possibility.
So, in a recent interview, J. Gordon Levitt had discussed his plans for you know, his upcoming future projects, to which he has firmly and very, I don't know any other way to say it, but he basically said, fuck G.I. Joe 2, he will not be returning as Cobra Commander. He gave no actual reason behind it, but we all know it's probably because G.I. Joe 1 sucked. And that J. Gordon Levitt is such an awesome actor anyway, I don't blame him. They also tried to discuss Dark Knight Rises as far as what his role being, how it's going, and he quickly evaded the question by bringing up another subject. So apparently Christopher Nolan has taught him well and that he won't be revealing any information on it. But kudos to J. Gordon Levitt for realizing, you know, G.I. Joe sucks and for bouncing out on that, because I just could not imagine him anymore as Cobra Commander. It just didn't work for me. Yeah.
I honestly, when I watched that movie, I didn't even know that's what he was supposed to be in the film. Like, I spent the whole movie trying to figure out, like, okay, where's Cobra and where's the Cobra Commander and, like, what's going on? I don't understand. And then they kind of, like, resolve that at the end, I guess. But, yeah, that was my reaction to it. So, you know what? Hey, kudos to Gordon Levitt for saying fuck this noise and going on to do something else.
Right, right.
So, I'm sure everybody has been wondering what's going to happen now that Marvel is part of Disney. And there's been a lot of speculation as to what type of controls that they might place on them. Well, the first edict from Disney has been passed down to Marvel, in that they have dictated that all Moveral? Yes, Moveral.
Awesome.
They're changing the name from Marvel to Moveral.
Is that like, you know, Marvel's own laxative?
Yeah, it must be. let me start over. They've dictated that all Marvel superhero content must originate from the U.S. So apparently, I guess Disney doesn't like the idea that some of the things have been being drawn and, I guess, printed in the U.K. and other countries and then shipped overseas.
Well, here's what I see what the problem is, and I'm learning a lot having been you know, a comic book creator and writer and stuff. Apparently, a lot of artists that comic companies are now using are overseas, and it's because they. All right, so a professional comic book artist will get paid anywhere from $250 to $300 a page that they draw.
Right.
And that's how they make their money. Overseas, however, they're charging them up to as low as 50 cents a page to $50 a page to draw. So they can save a lot of money by hiring these overseas artists. And we've seen that in comics already.
Every industry, basically.
Right. So, but we've seen that with like Diablo Studios, as well as a couple other. What's his name? The review we did about The Last Blood. The artist there was from Honduras, you know. So
okay, so they basically have been outsourcing
right
the stuff to cheaper artists and writers.
Absolutely, and so that's what Marvel is trying to stop. Is the outsourcing part of it. So, I mean, you can't be too angry at them, but at the same time, it's like, so you're going the opposite of how Superman went. So, I don't know. It's retarded. They're retarded.
Well, I don't think that they're saying that the superheroes themselves all have to be U.S. citizens.
Oh, right. No, but I mean, like, as opposed to the news story that came out last week about Superman renouncing America, here's Marvel saying, yo, we're still with America. Woo! You know what I mean?
Right.
So, yeah, it's I don't know.
Well, maybe it'll actually be a good thing because it might actually, you know, create a few more jobs in this broken economy we have.
Right. So, yeah. Anyway, I wanted to give a quick shout out to a friend of ours we had met a few months ago, and Daniel Corey. Daniel Corey was the creator of Danger Cat Studios and the creator of the comic book Moriarty. He had a chance to come down and sit down with us at the Roswell Comic Convention and show off his book and, you know, make a few sales and what have you and just promote it as much as possible. Since then, Moriarty has been picked up by Image Comics and is now being published through them. And tonight, Daniel Corey will be having his first his release party from Image Comics held at I just totally blanked out, Golden Apple in Los Angeles. So I wanted to give a quick shout out to Daniel. Hey, good job. Congratulations. It's nice to see that you've, you know, moved up to the big league and what have you. So look for more on Daniel Corey from Image Comics. And yeah, I still have the original done by him, so it's worth more now. So yeah. Brian?
So guess who's getting their own comic?
Me.
I'll give you a hint. You're fired.
Me. Oh, is this a Blue Water rant?
Yes, it is.
Yay!
Blue Water rant. Apparently, Blue Water is jumping back into the political ring by deciding that they needed to publish a comic book about potential political candidate Donald Trump for their whatever political power series crap thing that they've got going on. So I'm thinking with this one, you know, they're probably going to end up having to publish two comics. They're going to have to do one about Donald Trump, but they're going to have to do one for his hair.
Right.
Because, I mean, you can't – his hair is an entity of its own, so yes. It's going to have to be done.
Much like Stan Lee's symbiote that lives on top of his head.
Yeah. Trump has. Well, I think that Donald Trump's hair is the original symbiote that's just kind of spread out.
I don't know. Stan Lee has had his before Donald Trump. So, where Stan Lee has the Venom symbiote, Donald Trump has Carnage.
Yeah. So, yeah. Way to go, Blue Water.
And this in no way reflects our friend Julian, who is now an artist for Blue Water. We love you, Julian, but we will be talking crap about you on the future show, just so you know.
I should point out, just in case my position is not entirely clear, that they're so-called biography comics that I have a problem with. Like, Blue Water's other franchises and, like, their own original stuff, whatever, that's fine. You know, I don't have a problem with them doing that. I just don't get why people want comic books about famous people or infamous people or just people that are really not anything special other than they have shitloads of money. I don't get it. But, you know, whatever.
I wonder how they're going to draw his hair in the comic book.
Like I said, they're going to have to draw a whole separate comic just for the hair.
So every image you see of Donald Trump in his comic book will be from, like, the forehead down.
Right.
And then another comic book will come out about his hair. Just,
right.
You know, same scenes, just with his hair in them. It'll be awesome. So New Image has released a promo image and synopsis for The Expendables Part 2. Here is this quick synopsis. The Expendables are back, and this time it's personal. After Tool, played by Mickey Rourke, the heart and soul of the Expendables, is brutally murdered on a mission, his comrades swear to avenge him. They're not only the ones who want blood. Tool's beautiful, young, and wild daughter Fiona embarks on her own revenge mission, complicating matters when she is captured and ransomed by a ruthless dictator plotting to destroy a resistance movement. Now Barney and the Expendables must risk everything to save her and humanity. So, yeah. There you go. I liked Expendables. I thought it was an awesome man movie. So I can't wait to see part two.
I enjoyed it for what it was. And I probably will end up watching part two. But I could not in good conscience call it a good movie.
Right.
It is what it is.
No. Plot-wise, it was stupid. Stupid as hell.
Right.
But the action, the over-the-top fighting and explosions and everything, I thought it was awesome.
At one point, I tried to figure out what the actual plot of the movie was, and it almost gave me an aneurysm, so I just stopped and just watched it.
It's a pure eye candy movie, and that's fine with me. So.
All right, well, why don't we go ahead and take a quick break, and then when we be back, we'll do some reviews and shit.
Yay!
Hey, this is Cricket. I'm new to Forbidden Panel, and I'm also new to the whole world of geek. And I'm really excited to get your suggestions on new comic books and movies, things that are old, new, because I really don't know anything about any of it. So if you have any suggestions, just send them to me at cricket@forbiddenpanel.com. That's cricket@forbiddenpanel.com, and I'll see you online.
And we're back. And do you have my cookies yet?
Nope, you still haven't earned them.
Son of a bitch. All right. Tell me about Thor, then.
Well, I am glad you asked. First off, so, as many of you know, Thor came out to theaters this past week. I had the opportunity to go catch the midnight showing that Four Color Fantasies was having. It's very nice having your own theater surrounded by a bunch of geeks that you know. And it just, I don't know, adds a little something to it.
I'm jelly.
You are jelly. It's all in your hands. And moving on. Anyway. So, Thor. Personally, I thought Thor was okay. I didn't think it was great or wonderful, but I also didn't think it failed at all. You know, it's just, it was an okay movie. It was a decent movie. I thought that the directing was great. I thought, you know, Kenneth Branagh did a great job in the directing of the movie. I thought that Chris Hemsworth was a perfect Thor. I would have liked to have seen him with longer hair and maybe a bushier beard, but I thought he did a great job in being that character. He nailed it as far as I'm concerned. The guy that stole the show had to have been Tom Hiddleston, though, as Loki. He came in out of nowhere and he just nailed that role right off the bat. The things I didn't like about the movie was that the costume looked really fake. I mean, it looked really cheesy and fake, and I'm going to run down to Walmart and buy the same thing. That's what it felt like to me. Some of the set pieces, while looking really pretty, were obvious miniatures. And you could tell that in the film, and it was just it took me out of the environment for me. I also did not enjoy seeing Natalie Portman get wet every 5 seconds or every time Thor spoke. That just kind of got on my nerves after a while. But
metaphorically wet. I thought like there was just like a whole bunch of pointless rain scenes in the movie.
Well, it is Thor. So, you know, he created weather in her pants. I don't know what else I can say about the movie. It was decent for what it was, and I understand that it's very hard to make a movie like this and try and base it in a reality or a world that we'll accept. But then I look back and I'm like, well, they did a great job in like 13th Warrior, the Lord of the Rings series, you know, movies like that where there is a mythical element, magic, and what have you, and yet it comes off well. It doesn't seem as fake as this movie does. Now, maybe it's because I saw it in 3D that it enhanced the fakeness, but I don't know. I'm not willing to go spend more money to see it in 2D to see if I'm right or wrong. You know,
it sounds like basically your main argument is that just the world of the movie wasn't fully realized.
It just looked too... It looked like a comic book movie, and I did not appreciate that. You know, where they made... Again, I referenced Batman, and, you know, Batman Begins in the Dark mm-hmm. Knight. You know, in Batman, halfway through the movie, you remember that you're watching a Batman movie. Otherwise, you're like, man, this is like an awesome, cool movie that doesn't seem to be based in any type of fantasy world. And even in Dark Knight, you know, you can't... That movie feels very real. The Joker came off great. The set pieces, everything just looked real, bound in reality. Whereas Thor, yes, it's bound in myth and fantasy, but it still looks cheesy. It still looks like miniatures painted with cameras closed up. You know, it didn't feel real to me, and it just pulled me out of it. I did not like the casting of Ray Stevenson as Volstagg, who has to be one of my favorite characters of the Warriors 3. Ray Stevenson, who played Punisher in Punisher Warzone. Volstagg is supposed to be this huge, massive person that's always eating and what have you. And in the movie, he looked like this... I don't know. He just looked stupid, in my opinion. I did like Idris Elba's portrayal of Hemsdale. I thought he did a great job with it, and I don't see where people were having concerns with that as far as the race concerns that everyone kept bringing up. There was no doubt that was his job, and he did a great job in doing it. You know? I don't know what to tell you. A lot of people are loving this movie, and I can see why, and I will give it its due in that matter. But for me, it felt too fake. I just didn't feel it. So, yeah, there you have it.
Yeah, I'm still debating giving it a shot, going to see it. Just, I've become so much more stingy about going to the movies with as expensive as they are.
Right. And that's what's bad about it, you know. Kat Dennings did a great job as a comic relief. You know, she made things funny and brought up obvious points that we were all thinking. So I appreciate that, but yeah, I don't know. Anthony Hopkins can do no wrong. He nailed Odin, you know. But let me know what you guys think. Tell me where you think I'm wrong. You know, give me your opinion based on it. You know, and I don't mind discussing it, but it's in my
Start some flame wars on Panelcast.
Something, man. But otherwise, it just, you know. Blah. Blah, blah, blah. And here's what's funny. For those of you that have seen the movie and don't know about this yet, the role of Hawkeye, I can't remember who the actor's name that played it, but, you know, they show Hawkeye in the movie. And because they had filmed it after, you know, the movie was already finished, you don't see Hawkeye actually interact with anybody, nor does he shoot a bow. He's just being there as Hawkeye for, like, a cameo. And that matter, I appreciate it, and the whole crowd, like, you know, cheered for him being in the movie. But you can tell it was an obvious, you know, add-on. It was a reshoot or something, you know. It's just, eh.
It looked like just kind of, like, green-screened him in there. He's like, hey, guys.
No, it looked like he was on the actual set, but he was on it after everybody left. Like,
oh.
You know, he's sitting in this elevated bucket position where has a bead down on Thor with his arrow, but it... There's nobody else in the scene. He's just by himself. You know, you can tell it's just an add-on. Mm. You know, and for those of you who have yet to see it, stay after the credits because you know Nick Fury and Loki have a little conversation in there. So that kind of makes it worth it. Though I am excited with the fact that they're filming the Avengers immediately after this movie was released, and Chris Hemsworth basically, you know, didn't have to make any changes to a physical appearance to appear in the Avengers film. So on that note, I am excited about Again, Chris Hemsworth, I think, did a great job as Thor and nailed the role. He just needs to get a little bushier, in my opinion. So,
does Thor even have a beard? I thought he was just, like, bare-faced.
It depends on the era of Thor that you focus on. But I think with Hemsworth, the way that he looks, you know, his facial appearance, he makes a better Thor with a longer beard, a little bit more bushier beard. But he was just a little too clean-cut and pretty for me in that aspect. But otherwise, I thought he nailed it. He did a great job. And there you have it. That's my review of Thor. Brian.
Yeah.
Have you read anything this week?
I did, actually. I decided that, you know, I probably should read something. And I was going to go get some stuff for Free Comic Book Day, and then, you know, I didn't end up making that. But I did get to the comic book store, and fortunately for me, my local comic store had their trades on sale for half off, so I decided, you know what? I keep meaning to read Fable, so I'm actually going to start doing that. So I got the first one and read it. And for anybody out there that's not familiar with this, I mean, I know I'm kind of 9 or 10 years late to the game on this comic, but Fables is basically a sort of modern retelling of, not even retelling, more of a reimagining of fairy tale characters. The basic plot line is that all of the characters from every fable and fairy tale and children's tale that you can think of were sort of run out of their home by this force called the Adversary and are forced to live in the real world with what they call the mundanes.
Right.
And basically just kind of have to try to eke out a life for themselves amongst normal humans while trying to remain hidden. The first story arc that I read involves a sort of murder mystery story in which Snow White's sister Rose Red goes missing and it's believed that she's been murdered. The Big Bad Wolf is reimagined in this story as basically a sort of like crime noir detective who picks up the trail and starts to follow the story. I have to say that I really enjoyed this. And that's why I was saying earlier with the Peter Pan story that it's kind of given me an idea of what can be done with a more adult retelling of fairy tales. And I think, too, the whole adult aspect of these stories, like kind of removing them from the Disney-fied picture that everybody has of fairy tales, is actually kind of more true to the original stories that were collected by the Grimm brothers, because those stories were meant to be cautionary tales and were supposed to be kind of grim and violent. And I think a lot of the sort of like nerfing that Disney does with their stories kind of take some of that out of there. So I like to see that they go back to sort of this, you know, the characters kind of back in their kind of gritty setting again.
Right. I thoroughly enjoyed the first trade paperback of Fables. I thought, you know, it was, it basically shock and awe at that point, because it takes everything you know about these fairy tale characters and switches it up. You know, and
right.
Puts them in based in a reality, real environment, and I really dug what they did with it. So I'm glad to hear that you enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, I definitely. It was kind of interesting too because of the subtle ways that they played with the characters while still kind of keeping them true to the original fairy tale basis of the characters.
Right.
I think really kind of worked out, like the way that they portray the Big Bad Wolf as this detective who's, you know, kind of had like this dark, troubled past and has reformed and is trying to make his way and basically using the only skill set that he has now, you know, which is basically kind of poking his nose into things.
I like how they show him smoking all the time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he still has the wolf senses, so he has to smoke to cover up, you know, all the bad smells that exist in the world, you know. And I really dug that part.
Yeah, the dynamics between all the characters I enjoyed too, at least as far as the ones that they showed. There was a lot of characters that kind of just come in for little bit parts, and I don't know if later in the series they have some more prominent roles.
Yeah, later on in the series they expand on pretty much all the characters and let you get to know them a little bit better. And it's pretty cool. I mean, I'm glad to see that you're enjoying it, and I want to see. I look forward to you reading more of it and telling us how whether you enjoy that or not.
Yeah, I definitely want to kind of follow up on the story and find out what all this business is with the adversary.
Awesome. So yeah, if you haven't had a chance to pick that up, pick it up soon, and let us know what you think about it. If you haven't had a chance to watch Thor, go see it at matinee, and let us know what you think about it.
And I guess I should mention, too, that Fables was written by Bill Willingham, and art was done by Lan Medina.
There you go. So we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, I'll be talking about my experience with Free Comic Book Day.
Forbidden Panel is currently looking for artists. If you or someone you know would like to join us, please visit www.forbiddenpanel.com.
All right, well, we're back.
Yay.
So, I missed Free Comic Book Day yet again.
Shame on you.
So, AJ, you're going to have to let me live vicariously through you. So, first of all, I guess, just give me a general sense of how you think this Free Comic Book Day went.
I don't know. I slept through it and missed it altogether.
All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of the Panelcast.
Yeah. Good night, everybody. Now, man, I can't say enough great things about Free Comic Book Day. 3 years ago, I had met Justin at a random comic convention, and we had discussed working on a project together, which turned out to be ZKS. Right. Well, halfway through us, getting things worked out and what have you, Free Comic Book Day came up, and we decided to, go on down and see, gauge the fans' reactions on whether or not we should continue on with the story and what have you. So we did that, and we got bombarded with just all kinds of questions and requests and what have you. So, we decided that was a good sign for us that we should go ahead and continue on with the project and keep working. So here we are 3 years later. It's basically Justin's and mine first anniversary. It's the first comic convention, any type of show that we've ever done with Forbidden Panel. And it did not fail to disappoint. Free Comic Book Day is basically an annual event that happens at all comic book stores throughout the nation where they give out free comic books to the industry, and comic book publishers send out little teaser books to everybody and allow them to pick them up for free to get them interested in some of the stories that they're creating and what have you, so that they'll increase their sales by that time. But it's also a wonderful day for kids because they get to come out and have fun, meet a lot of comic creators and personalities and what have you, and just have a blast. Four Color Fantasies is, in my opinion, the best place to be at because they throw on this huge carnival-type environment where they have a bouncy house and face painting and just a ton of people out there representing their individual companies. So,
wait, that was disappointing?
No. Did I say it was disappointing?
Yeah, you said it failed to disappoint.
Yeah, it failed.
Or it does not. Maybe I'm hearing you wrong. I'll shut up.
You shut up. It failed to disappoint, which means it did a wonderful and amazing job, Brian.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I was understanding it right.
Four Color Fantasies had 2,700 people show up for their event in Free Comic Book Day. It saw the likes of Boom Studios out there with representatives and creators from there. It saw the 501st, the Empire Fan Force, the Star Wars Guild, Lightsaber Guild. Pretty much everybody that you saw at the Inland Empire Comic Expo was here at this event. And it was just a lot of fun. And as it turns out, Forbidden Panel and Zombie Kill Squad has a devote following, a big fan following, because everybody just zeroed in on us and would come directly to us. And yeah, we had Cameron Dortch, who is the artist on Security, one of the artists on Security, as well as Albert Carrion, who is another artist on Security, out there doing signings. We had posters from the first few strips up there. And they got bombarded like crazy. Security apparently is going to be doing a wonderful job because everybody just loved it. Conversations were brought up about the instances in which we had. ZKS fans were flooding around. We had statues up done by Joe Preston that were getting just amazing reviews. People were just flabbergasted at the detail and how wonderful they came out. We had posters for ZKS giving away that we were giving away, and everybody, I mean, they got swooped up. We had over 300 posters that were just gone halfway through the day. And that was what we were giving away for free. We didn't have any comic books or what have you to give out, but we had the posters, and they just got swooped up like crazy. So, yeah, I mean, great fan reaction. We even had, and Brian, this made my day, I have to tell you. This made me smile. I almost cried at this point. This kid, 10 years old, comes up to us, and he's like, I'm a huge fan of the comic book. I love it. I have, you know, all the issues you guys have put out. And he starts thumbing through all the posters that we have. He's like, I've got this one. I've got this one. Oh, this is the poster of the last page of your Zero issue. And on it, it says, in ZKS we trust. I'm like, did you just quote my comic book to me? Like, I looked over at Justin. He's grinning. He's like, he just quoted a comic book to us. And, like, you know, it was just I'm getting goosebumps now discussing it. Like, it was just a wonderful feeling. And this is why I do this, why I try so hard. Is that this little kid who can love our comic book so much and quote it to us, knows it verbatim, that, you know, it was just an amazing feeling. And that's what we had the entire day. Just a great day of meeting cool fans, being able to put smiles on their faces, giving out free posters, talking to everybody. We had photos taken of us. We took pictures of all our fans. And, man, it was just a wonderful turnout. You know, I can't thank Chris and Nat enough, the people that run Four Color Fantasies, to allow us to set up a booth there and talk to people. Because I don't know. This is why I do comic books. This is why I want to create comic books, is because of this environment. Fan reactions, people loving it, and us having a great time. And that's what it was. It was an amazing time at Free Comic Book Day. So, yeah.
It always does feel like an honor to be able to work with Four Color with any of their events. Because, I mean, Chris is pretty obviously passionate about comics.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, he puts on these big fanfares for like, Free Comic Book Day and, you know, with a lot of his other events. So
right, the movie premieres, Free Comic Book Day. He does at the Rose Bowl Comic Convention over at the Rose Bowl. You know, he's a big fan of comic books and a big fan of indies as well. I mean, I'm always getting phone calls like, when are you gonna have more comics out? We need them. You're on high demand. We need to get more copies up, you know?
Right. So,
I can't say enough wonderful things about Chris and Nat. They're awesome people.
Agreed.
So,
all right. Well, aside from, you know, from the kid quoting the comics at us, like, what kind of things particularly stood out about it?
There were a couple people there that would roll up. I mean, you know, the kids, it was 50-50. It was weird. It was kids introducing their parents to comic books and parents introducing their kids to comic books. And that's what stood out to me, in that it was just, you know, we've always said that Forbidden Panel is all about creating an environment and a network of people where geeks can feel comfortable with and come and chat and hang out. We give geeks a home, you know. And this was the epitome of that situation, where you see children introducing their parents to comic books and then parents trying very hard to get the kids into the comic books. We had one parent came up with this child. Couldn't have been more older than six, you know, and he was explained to him what comic books were, and he came up to our booth, and, you know, he was like, hey, so, you know, this is my son. I want to get him into comic books badly. He's already a zombie fan. Can we get these posters? Do you mind signing them? Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we're talking to the kid, trying to help have fun with him and what have you. And there was instances like that stood out for me, aside from, you know, people quoting our comic book to us, but.
Right.
You know, people coming up and asking us, how did you get started? I used to draw all the time, but, you know, I just fell out of it. What keeps you motivated? Stuff. It was the questions. The questions were what made it for me. You know, you could always tell the people that are there just for free stuff.
Right.
As opposed to fans.
Because they just come and, you know, take it and they go.
Right. They come, they swoop it up, they bounce out. You know, they're there for the comics, the food, and they go. But fans actually want to talk to you. They want to interact with you. They ask you questions. You know, they want pictures. They want, you know, autographs, what have you.
Right.
You know, and most of the people were surprised that we don't charge for signing anything. we've always said that there's no way I'm going to charge people for my autograph. That's bullshit, in my opinion. I understand that some people need to do that. That's how they make a living and what have you. Totally understandable. But I know that me as a fan, every time I wanted to come talk to a creator and have them sign something, it broke my heart that I had to pay for it. You know,
right.
It made me feel like it cheapened me as a fan. And so we promised that we would never, ever do that, and we don't. So when people found, one group of people, you know, they liked the ZKS pinup that Justin did, you know, the Iwo Jima replicant. And we're like, hey, do you want us to sign it for you? They're like, we're sorry, we can't afford it. And we're like, no, we don't charge. Come here. We snatched the poster out of their hand, signed it, gave it back to them. We're like, oh, my God, thank you so much. Well, you know, they were gushing over it. And
right.
You know, that stuff like that, that's what stands out. You know, it makes you feel like you're worth it, you know?
Right. So. Right. Really, like, getting a connection with the fans.
Absolutely. And, you know, and we're sitting there. We're indie creators. There's a group of us indie creators sitting in one section. And pros were walking up to us, you know, talking to us. You know, asking for signage, you know, signatures and what have you, and, you know, and vice versa. And that's what was cool, too, and seeing that side of the community, the behind-the-table community, gelling well and geeking out over other people behind the table. You know, that was kind of cool as well.
Yeah, I think that is one thing that seems kind of unique to the comic industry is that, there's a bit of the rivalry between like Marvel and DC and some things like that, but there doesn't seem to be like any specific brand loyalty when it comes to the people that actually write and draw the comics. Like they may work for Marvel, but they still buy, you know, from Boom and IDW and, you know, whatever else. Like they still read other people's comics, and it's like there's competition, but there's not really.
Right.
And I think that's one of the things that I like, where it's not like, oh, well, they're making their zombie comic and we've got our zombie comic. They're the enemy.
Right.
And, you know, we've got to try to outsell them. It's like they can – both stories can exist in the same market and they can still sell together.
Right. And, you know, and just because – you know, we write our own comic books. We write zombie comic books, but that doesn't stop me from reading Robert Kirkman stuff. That doesn't stop me from reading iZombie or any of the other zombie comics that exist out there, you know. And it's not that I want to read them to compare them to or anything. I'm just a fan of the genre. I'm a fan of comic books.
I honestly could care less how similar or different, you know, Walking Dead is to ZKS. It's not about that. It's about the fact that Walking Dead is a great comic.
Right.
And I want to read it. That's all it is for me. I don't feel any sort of sense of that fierce competition that you get in a lot of other industries.
Right. No, I'm not. Yeah, I mean, it's, you can't say that you know, I made a romance movie and that's all I'm going to ever watch is my romance movie. No, you're still going to watch action movies. You're still going to watch dramas and all that stuff. It's the same with comic books. You know, and I will always be a comic book fan. That's why I got into the business. So why would I stop being a fan now that I'm in the business? You know, that just doesn't make any sense to me. And so, you know, again, seeing like the guys from Boom Studios come over to our booth and be a fan of it, to see the 501st and the Empire fan group, them coming over, and they bought every single thing we had. You know, so that's cool to me. That's awesome. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I got to get that picture. I missed the opportunity to take a picture. Darth Vader was sitting there reading the ZKS book, and I failed at getting that picture because I was signing. So I was like, damn it.
So, yeah. And I'm sure there'll be plenty more moments like that in the future.
Absolutely.
I'm just hoping that one of these days I'm going to be able to start making it out to Free Comic Book Day and 24 Hour Comic and all of the other events.
Yep, we miss you here. I mean, especially for the Inland Empire Comic Expo, which comes out September 4th, people. It's going to be awesome. You know, it'd be nice to have you out there and experience all this with us. But, you know, we pimp your name out. And it makes all the books that you have worked on collectibles because they don't have your signature. And when you do sign them, you know, it's like a special thing. Now I'm just rambling.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. I figured I would let you ramble a little bit.
You're such a sweetheart, Brian. Thanks. So anyway, yeah, there you have it. Free Comic Book Day 2011. Awesome, just like all the other ones. We will be doing a kind of a release party coming up here at the Rollsville Comic Show. I don't know if we're going to do it in June or July, but El Super Maximo, which is our newest title, should be printed out sometime, and then we'll make an appearance there, and we'll let you guys know when it's happening.
All right. Well, if we don't have any other announcements, I guess that is pretty much going to wrap up the episode.
Yep. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Please remember to come visit us at ForbiddenPanel.com. Check out the Inland Empire, the iecomicexpo.com for any news of the upcoming comic shows that we're doing. Yeah, so episode 84 in the wraps. What do you think, Brian?
I give it 2 thumbs up.
Sweet, sweet, sweet. Any last words before we go?
Nope.
Awesome. Well, then we'll see you guys next week for episode 85.
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.